Welcome to the Allowed Podcast. I'm Louise Steinman, curator of the Allowed series, presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles. Allowed is a series of dynamic lectures, readings, performances, and discussions that take place in the Mark Taper Auditorium at the historic Downtown Central Library in the heart of Los Angeles. To learn more about Allowed and learn how you can help the Library Foundation of Los Angeles support the Los Angeles Public Library, please go to our website, www.alloudla.org. The Allowed program you're about to hear was produced in 2009.
We are proud to team up once again with Fred Dewey of Beyond Baroque and Suzanne Lummis of the Los Angeles Poetry Festival to bring you this, the 14th annual Newer Poets Reading, spotlighting six up-and-coming Los Angeles poets. Beyond Baroque, as you may well know, was recently on the brink of extinction with the potential loss of its lease, which has since been gloriously renewed for another 25 years, securing its essential spot in the LA poetry landscape. Beyond Baroque, in case you didn't know, offers an extensive program of public readings, free workshops, a project room, bookstore, publications, and chapbook small press archive. It's in Venice. Since 1968, Beyond Baroque has nurtured and presented many of the best writers, artists, and poets from the West Coast, around the country, and the world. The Los Angeles Poetry Festival, founded in 1989 by Suzanne Lummis and Sherman Pearl, exists to present citywide poetry events that focus on the culture, diversity, character, and history of Los Angeles, as expressed by some of LA's most talented poets. I should add that, according to their respective MySpace profiles, Beyond Baroque is 41 years old, an Aries, female, and currently single, while the LA Poetry Festival claims to be 35 years old, a Libra, male, and also single. We don't want to take the credit for matchmaking here, but I think that in the case of tonight's program, you will see that these two organizations, both dedicated to keeping the world safe for poetry, make for a truly beautiful pairing. Before I go ahead and introduce Amelie Frank of Beyond Baroque, I'd like to let you know about a program we have scheduled for next week, Tuesday at 7 o'clock, with poet Ann Waldman. If you don't know Ann Waldman, she's the co-founder of the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics at Naropa University and kind of a second-generation beat and New York school poet. So that's next week. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, please join me in turning off your cell phones and in welcoming Amelie Frank of Beyond Baroque to the Los Angeles Central Library.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. Thank you, everybody, for turning out tonight. This is a phenomenal turnout. I think this may be even larger than last year's turnout. And how wonderful and fitting. This is the 14th annual Newer Poets event. And we are introducing tonight six spectacular poets to your city, Los Angeles. And I want to also issue greetings from Fred Dewey, who could not be here tonight. He is on the East Coast attending to his family. But he wanted to send out his greetings and congratulations to all six of the newer poets who are participating tonight. Now, just to remind the poets, your set is 10 minutes. You have a 10-minute set. You will hear each poet read for 10 minutes. I am recuperating from a bout of bronchitis, and given the current flu fears, if you go over 10 minutes, I'll come and cough on you. All right? Are we understood? Wonderful. I'm going to introduce our first newer poet. He is a young, impetuous thing who has worked in the bookstore at Beyond Baroque and for the all-important Beyond Baroque Literary Archives, which is the largest collection of regional poetry, Southern California regional poetry that exists. It's extremely valuable because it documents our scene, our poets, our students, our artists, all of the things that come from poetry, including recordings and videotapes of performances. And he has tended to it. Peter Eirich, our first poet. He was born in Germany, grew up in Europe, and has visited many, many countries, including several continents, Asia, Europe, North, and South America. He attended UCLA, where he got his bachelor's in creative writing, poetry. He was nominated for the Ina Kulbrith Memorial Poetry Prize in 2007, and he was awarded the Fred and Edith Herman Memorial Prize from the Academy of American Poets in 2008. That's pretty damn impressive. So I'd like you all to welcome him. He's new, he's brash, he's bold. He's Peter Eirich.
Thank you. Let me get my timer out. Thanks to Fred Dewey, and thank you, Amelie, and thanks also to Justin and Suzanne. Rhea's Hemstitch. Deconstruct for me, baby. Pain is bread in French. You might be glorious on Mars, star sign of lunar cred. The nothing diaspora ensured us uncertainty. We watched him dig an atavist hole after years of cement reinforcement. We rebuilt Aquitania from earthworms and intumescence. This is a new journal in Los Angeles called Lana Turner, edited by Cal Bediant and David Lau. And it has some interesting new poets. I'm in it too, but it also has some great people like Alan Badiou and Barbara Guest. So it's a real honor to kind of be one of the newer poets in here. This is from, this is called Infield. I brought some copies of this if you're interested, by the way. In Yield, the maps of catacombs escaped the celebrities, but you didn't take them. You went through the front. Presto. Audiencias listen. Zone the town to my rainfall, the quebracho never needed. The drought is on. Let's face it, the Alps fade to your undies. I'm only Europa in dream. Tell me your Zapata secret. Devil stole tears for my lashes, flame fluid for baby Doc and his mound of money. Come south, windmill. Patria chica, I need you. Play copper on crops, vote coca and poppies, I need you. Thanks, Cal Bediant, for helping me out with my poetry and publishing me in Lana Turner. Your absence stains the corridor. Your inner ear slides apocalypse down the ferryman's foghorn, warning wasp corpse floating in apple soda. I only want you to feel loved, you strange birthright, Tuesday Tristessa, lily of the pylon, you tress, given, saline queen, you jinxed it, gave away dust ribbons, on sleeve and spell, you Tesla Valley and burrowed wheel. The marksman's son is in room 5. Sleeve off the family rifle. Do you always keep caseless and kind? Rounds on the ground, a tea cozy pistol for weddings and odes. Say you'll slay me, boy, like you mean it. That look you shot for milk in my winter to give it. A 4 a.m. chisel pushed soot and a bullet into my shin. Be gentle, you said to the trigger man, his lineage carving out a name. Phariathene no more. She noticed you, the raw pawn, the nail thrown starker, the spice. By matchlight, you and your shoddy, his barrel down eyes, a peppery cough, a swing. You don't even have to aim, I said to the lookout. Wernicke, I loved you like a stopcock, aphasic and clean. I poured you out of my brain through the catch. Love in the digits. You felt up the vandal, so motherfucker in the sprawl. The vinegar river reclaims the concrete paint we learned to lean against. You've made it splash through. Report the tag for a city coronered coroner's bag. Glide down the billboard barbs like a red feather. Aiba Raluba von Gestern, it's a gift. The three rooms of melancholia are reserved. Was kannst du mir Neues erzählen? Diebstahl und Mörderpech. You leapt onto graffiti. Alle sex is best messy. The subway melted at dawn with you in it. The broken window law licensed rust over spray masks. You picked up my bail. Escape instructions, part one. Trains in the desert don't harbor you like the river might if it weren't so red. Serpent iron and splash control for the sheer desperation of it, as the splintered leg slows the other from pushing you forward through the track gravel. Escape instructions, part two. Rune for poison on the walls creep into your pillowcase. Crown of mold seeps into skull, fizzing and triggers. Oxygen bubbling a stew I hold your blood against. Dragging tracks and blame your weight stand. Picking impetigo won't slake. Clinic syringes for your wild horse's naps. Ropes and Velcro gefällig. A yellow jacket inch up your arm. A paper trail, sting notes. Dear Levin, signed here and here. Wax sealed wounds. Skin postcards to Datura, Claude de Monesprit. If you mattress the live wire, you've arson on your prints and virus motive. An award pandemic for your consideration. Lies there catabatic. Rows of wind generators, giant praying mantids twirling swords at the bumble bomb sky. The T-minus 8 minute farewell. Two more. Teeth dreams. I've gathered my teeth dreams of you and planted them in my suitcase. This city where you dropped our collision like a cold cigarette, zipped up your dress, scattered sawdust, and ran. I don't know what's more fetching, your hydroline rants, or the mesh you took your heart to and clowned up with your strap on. I dished my belt to the water yard, but nothing to line up your planets. The curbs remember your sciatins and shoes, the cement size for your day trips. You play in the skeleton breath of streetlights, your hazel insipid and authority. The city won't delay you. When you spire over cranes that build up a fight, they let you in for free. If you were here, jump my bones, I push you against the wall, squeeze your legs, raise your arms, and your cunt kisses my belly. Your grip always was so smashing, your take me song of leverage and force. Every pharmacy in LA keeps your breakdown on file. Youth preserved grief in a page. As you shiver those kids off, your crow feet I touch stomach soft. Photography of you fucks everything side-streeted. The museums want your pillow talk in their guts. I used to think tigers followed you around here as horchata washed your spicy toes. It's ecotone, love. I'll meet you again underground. Okay. Panoply gasp. The fluff clinging to pollen lashes, a throbbing and a going out, spilling all over oils and wrinkled canvas, but fair and grappling the walls for anchoring you and your centerline lips over the hurt. I go in you like a splashed bathwater, and now in an orchard turns pink for a wave near the bay, shoves spice and pubic mango skin curled up, then wanton and thrusting purple underhanded revenge, a cutting into and a spring-loaded sliding of ancestral moans even the first two never learned to let out, a clasping and a wonder we didn't curl up and collapse into the ground, sinking under, forgiven for good, for wanting, for taking, for lungs up in last air, the trees and catheter twigs in our veins, wrestling us down in century time, this wisdom must stay in womb. That yes, a pickaxe plot box and a heart. That yes, a sinew so near the nerve, that a neck field of hours in play. That the echo start fucking will spasm blue and dripping again down the small of your back. that quickened forever but far too soon an offended ache, and how dare you stop needy and ignored when your brain's out and belting, and know when you don't come again with this ardent blush, and know in a pond water, letting us down and float slow like a blood and a well and a wait, wait and a wait. A light cry and a whimper, a look and a catching, a starry kneel, and why leave? For how long? And with whom? Thanks.
Another round for Peter Eyrick, ladies and gentlemen. When we select the newer poets, the LA Poetry Festival chooses three poets, and Beyond Baroque chooses three poets. Always Beyond Baroque, in making its choice, turns to its sister institution, the World Stage, to help us make the appropriate selections each year. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with the World Stage, all two of you, the World Stage is the artistic anchor and centerpiece of the community of Leimert Park, and more importantly, it's one of the most vital poetry institutions in Southern California. And this year, we were given the name of Billy Burgos. And Billy is a Los Angeles-based portrait painter, illustrator, and designer. And one thing you will see in the World Stage is a lot of cross-pollination between poets and artists, poets who are also musicians, and Billy is no exception. He is a curator on the staff of gotpoetry.com. And he has been featured at many local poetry venues, including the Anansi Writers Workshop at the World Stage and the Poets Jazz House. He was also recently featured in Poetry LA, for those of you who are familiar with Hilda Weiss's project, where she is documenting all of the poets. So she documented Billy recently. His first collection of poetry is forthcoming from Deadbeat Press, and he is also the author of a children's book. Please welcome Billy Burgos.
Wow. First impression, I'm glad I wore the dinner jacket. Huh, okay, past 2 years I've lived in Leimert Park. I just don't go to the World Stage. I live in the neighborhood, and I recently moved, but I did a heck of a lot of writing in the past 2 years living in Leimert Park. So most of the poetry I'm gonna read is, talking about the neighborhood. First piece I'm gonna read, a haiku called Resurrection. Complacency killed my muse. While love wept over it, death resurrected it. This piece is called A Ghetto Lament. The old block with its decadent emptiness, an urban landscape like Machu Picchu, with its detailed masonry of dwellings abandoned, left for economists and historians to place blame. All the grandmas are gone, sifted through foreclosure's clumsy sieve like fragile shards of sand. One too many high interest borrows against grandpa's garden city. 40 acres forfeited for grandbabies, 22-inch rims and Tims. Hip-hop's manifesto calls all the shots now. For the shirtless black boys on the corner with itchy trigger fingers and crack cocaine jihads. Where heaven's promise is only dollars raining at the feet of 40 strippers. There are no more tired uncles on the porches watching like literal lifeguards, speaking the penitentiary patois that made them OG accessible for the hard heads. The plague of recession eats all the villagers and leaves Wells Fargo babysitting the empty crib. Left to hold our heavy abjurations, our toxic loans, with only a bruised history's character flaws. Our ghosts left to loiter in the same empty houses without a will or a reason to go haunt elsewhere. One of the things that happened living in Leimert Park is a couple years ago I lost my father, so a lot of writing I did dealt with his loss. And, you know, as we as poets do, we explore all the you know, all the bad things in life, and we keep exploring them. So this piece is called The Family Plot. I woke to the words ringing like a morning church bell in my mind, buried on the family plot. My head, a cauldron of guilt and dawn vertigo. I was the only child that refused to take the long trip home to bury my father's ashes. Flushed cheeks against his warm urn seemed enough of a blessing and a curse. My strength was spent on process, grieving, concealing, wiping away the pain, welcoming bewilderment. Yet still in the confines of sleep, I visit him there most nights. Maybe it is penitence or atonement. Call it what you will, but sleep never offers enough time for this ritual. The turbulent plane ride that crisscrosses two oceans. The jagged line of Central America that smudges the cerulean of Pacific with the emerald of Caribbean. To then be baptized by this tropical heat, submerged beneath the phalanx of royal jungle trees that erase all urbanity. I have walked the paved road that connects Hattieville and Corozal Town, the road my father himself carved out with the youthful hands of a civil worker, measuring jungle math to the sum of industry. I have stepped gingerly over the red earth of this burial ground, listened to the taunt of howler monkeys in the vestibule of trees, fighting to take back what was theirs to begin with, the dead and their bounty. I have knelt on the cool earth beneath between the limestone tablets that measured my chronology, wrapped my spirit around theirs, follow the curve of etched letters, names so familiar. I have lingered in the memory of them all and cried into the quietness of the foliage. Listen to it, swallow words whole. Yet sleep never offers enough time. The church bell rings and rings until only the quartz light of morning offers me forgiveness and nothing else. Amelie has bronchitis, and I recently fractured my back about 3 months back, so I'm happy to be able to walk today. But one thing, when you're 36 and you fracture your back, it's different than when you're 26 and you fracture your back. You really start to question your mortality, and a lot of what I've been doing is writing about this. So a couple pieces about that. We are constantly attempting to slow down the march, like the aimless stragglers trailing a funeral procession. We have learned the art of sliding our goose steps across the narrow road of life, attempting to fool the fire. We are merely ephemera, guarding flammable wings. Maybe the short-lived petals of a hibiscus bush with pages already sun-singed. But life invites us forward with its iridescent things, knowing we are only children drawn to this light, its seraphim-coated infatuations, and if we crane further, maybe even love. Sometimes it is children that mirror a sparse goodness within, sometimes the sorcery of wealth. These things that allow us to waver into a waltz, a dance that numbs the wound. Then the snapping of our limbs in the amber hearth of the flame is only the cloak breaking of unseen trees deep within the forest. And the slow march becomes a stride toward the inevitable, and the short-lived becomes memorable. ballast. Today, inside the small room with the mahogany door, I will learn to imagine my worries into a pickle jar while placing them on a shelf in a corner. A mental ruse designed to stave off the vertigo of nightmares and heartburn. I will learn how the faint perfume of green apples and lavender can magically invite me into sleep's respite once again. But for now, I watch and listen as the names dwindle down, cozied up like lovers with the newly tenured miscreant, the drug addict and the insomniac, holding their blackened hearts like stillborn children. Our eyes with nowhere else to go but out the large window, Ferris wheeling up the exposed skeleton of a high-rise, Babel's latest heaven-bound tower, slowly becoming Monday's new midlife crisis. Following each airborne ballast, hypnotically sway over a jagged and fickle city. Each crimson girder hoisted up, like a steel rafter, lodged in the mind's wide-open eye. And if I did not read any of my children's poetry, I would be killed. So this piece is called Hot Comb. My daughter is knocking steadily now on the door of young womanhood. Last Saturday, she sat in a sticky leather chair at the hair salon and put the first hot comb to her thick curls, while anxious black women watched proudly, almost a rite of passage played to the ceremonial anthem of Donny Hathaway tunes. Burn the curls bone straight and smooth. She said she wanted it as straight as her favorite American girl doll, Kaya. She's American Indian, Dad. As straight as her Salvadorian friend Marina's silky black hair and straighter than her sister's wavy hair. I remember her at four when everyone was only some varying shade of brown. There was no black, no white. Those colors were exact and only meant checkerboards or kitchen floors. The word race at four meant size two kids sprinting from the car to the sandbox. At age four, hair has no texture. It holds no racial significance. But at nine, America has done its share of educating. He has snuck up and whispered into my daughter's ear like some aged pedophile stalking young girls. Whispered in his warm tone about the categories she must fit into. Categories that say straight hair means beauty and acceptance, and curly hair means nappy and ugly. Whispered in her ear about the preferred color palette that she must match like a numbered paint swatch. Colors that are unforgiving as they are stark. And she has listened while held in this bastard's grip. So as I watch my little girl brush the shiny mane of her newly straightened ponytail, I begin to whisper to her as a father must do to his daughter at that age about how beauty is not meant to be categorized because its roots lie buried in the earth of four continents. Whisper about her beauty, how her beauty lies on the outside as well as within. Whisper about why her hair is so much curlier than her sister's. Whisper about why her hair, no matter its texture, should always be worn with pride. And as I spoke, she stopped brushing and turned to me as that child of four again. Dad, I only straightened it so it would be easier for you to comb out. 9 years old, knocking steadily on the door of young womanhood. Steadily now. I know America is always lurking. Thank you.
Billy Burgos, ladies and gentlemen. I am so pleased about our next reader. Why? Because we met at the same time, in the same place as a certain group of poets. We came out of the Iguana Cafe together. She has been an effective, tremendous artist and influence under-recognized. I was delighted when we were able to select her to be a newer poet this year. Her name is Erica Erdman. She is a daughter of Los Angeles and a longtime student of Laurel Ann Bogan. And just a brief word, Laurel Ann Bogan, one of the most important teachers of poetry in Southern California. I'd like to acknowledge her. Are you here, Laurel Ann? Where are you? Laurel Ann is right there. You will hear throughout the history of the newer poets so much of Laurel Ann's influence, the way that she has midwifed these tremendous talents into our community. And Erica is one of those talents. She's the author of a poetry collection titled The Apocalyptic Kid. She was nominated for the Pushcart Prize for her work on that book. And I know she's going to kill me for saying this, but one of my best memories of her in performance was dressed up in full costume and makeup and hat, performing as William Burroughs. She did, as William Burroughs, reading the title poem from The Apocalyptic Kid. And we're very, very glad to have her. She's also, like Billy, an accomplished illustrator and has illustrated a number of other people's works, their books. So please, please welcome Erica Erdman.
Hi there. I want to thank everybody for coming out tonight and also thank the people who chose me to read for you. And a tip of the hat to Laurel. Several days after Bush's second election, I found myself feeling as though I was living in a foreign country. And one of the things we do in Laurel's class is we do in-class writing, which is a terrifying experiment, and it usually yields some interesting work. This was the one I wrote inspired by the recent election, Bush's, not Obama's. My fellow Americans, we run in packs, descend in fury upon solitary animals, sniff out the freshly bloodied, and finally ourselves. Turning one upon another, we do not lift our heads to spot the predators on our own ground who lie in prideful watch. We are many, vast numbers. They will still defeat us, all because our lives are ringed about with piss points, buried bones, and well-gnawed discontent. We no longer own ourselves, invest in hope, or speculate in futures. All is now, Zen horror. Past and future have been lost. Up, dogs, howl. The moon is rising. Choose and eat. Like many of the poets here, I own cats. And one of them, a small, gray, elder statesman, is named Elliot, of course. This poem is written for him. He has a habit of chewing on everything, including my computer cables, and licking my hands. This poem is called Salt. Reaching out to stroke the thin gray fur, I am not surprised when my old cat flashes out his needled fists to swat. There is no mercy given should I stir. With a deft blow, my hand between his paws, he laps industriously, tells me he knows that this is important. He shifts his pose, draws sweat from my fingers, tightens claws, hold me while he settles in to lick. This rule is ancient. Salt being said, preservative of friendships. Old Arabic saying, there is salt between us. Bread and salt were offered to propitiate good fortune, and I too think on fate. Touché, Torquemada. One day, crows descended to my street, not as in that film where many birds arrive in clots of 2 and 10 and 20, in sinister array and silence. These ravens, crows, whatever else they were, blew into the front garden all at once and knocked upon the paving stones. 10 priests in Mackinaws, a mercenaries' guild, sacked my mom's red peppermint petunias, drilled several dozen holes, and bore aloft their booty. Buried walnuts, black with age, were carried to considerable height. The afternoon was full of sharp demands before they strafed their final run and flung the nuts into the street, splitting the hulls and scaring bloody hell out of the cat. My mom dug up her flower bed and found more nuts concealed. The Spanish Inquisition could not have been of earthly use against a double clutch of clerics bent on murder. It's one of the few love poems I have ever written. It's called Why. Because the evening air is swimming with memory, because the mackerel sky is filled with promise, because the owls are waiting for the meadows to open, because you are here and I am here. Because the light is gently askew in the field, because the trees are filled with whispered rumor, because their leaves are burning on the branch, because your feet are naked in the grass, because the sun has fallen towards the earth, because the day teeters and tips towards evening, because the moon has paused behind the hill, because you are as real as a sundial, as classical, giving me the time and place to stand upright, catch the fading light for you, and shine. I have lost a number of friends, as most of us have, to AIDS, and this piece was written for all of them. Parallax. The boy of wax believes that his death will miss him as he creeps past it in the dark, that it sleeps sometimes, that after a heavy meal it tends to lethargy and vapors. Through candle skin, membrane, angeled with bees, he contains a secret that burns itself out in the absolute black of f-stopped eyes. He wears his apprehension well. Expectancy stutters in his skin, deconstruction all the way. This is the height of fashion, clothes that sit on us like cages. He bites his tongue, tastes brine and grunion, lips still numb, left stinging with afterimage and soft focus. He must believe in time-lapse photography, believe that in time the flesh forgets, believe that he has outfoxed his disease. The boy of wax has struck a bad bargain with a jealous god. I'm going to do one more. This is dedicated to my teacher, who is one of the best teachers and one of the kindest people I have ever known. It is called Mentor. I suppose I could wheedle my crows into line to sing something other than Brecht or Porter, but I leave them behind to saw and hammer and cross town to the shop of the master carpenter. She pares all of us down to essential components, carves each of us into our primal animals. She has built a maze of paper and ink and awaits us within its shifting walls. She can throw her voice around corners. She sleeps open-eyed, hears the stars fall. Moving slowly over her house, the moon is wise, will not sunder her Stygian sleep. Crossing town to the workshop of Laurel Ann Bogan, I ready my implements, sharpen my tools. Crows wheel and circle, but under her eye, I shape wood into wings and take my own flight. Thanks.
Yeah, I just gave Erica my bronchitis. Erica Erdman, ladies and gentlemen. Well, dang, we are filling up here. This is amazing. Suzanne, turn around and look at this room. This is astonishingly wonderful. Yes, I'm merely up here to tell you that I'm going to be handing over the rest of the evening to the fabulous Suzanne Lummis.
We have,
yeah, but we
for the photo op, everybody.
Oh, the photo op, yeah.
I mean, not often that you see two beauties. Aging beauties are the best, I think, aren't they? You know?
Yeah, I'm aging.
That's what we are. But beautiful still. All right. So what were we going to say something about me or what?
I was going to say something
about me.
I'm going to talk about Suzanne Lummis, that noir goddess, who is, among other
noir
things,
goddess.
Not only the founder of the Los Angeles Poetry Festival. Not only is she the editrix of Speechless, the online magazine, but, I mean, just
but
look
I have,
at the beret.
She also just had her nails done.
She just
and
had her nails.
Have a beret.
And she's got
really
spurs
important.
That jingle, jangle, jingle. She's
I'm
go.
Get
she's.
Some. They're on order.
She's going through this Western phase right now because she's got this
Western phase
job at the Autry. So
that's right. So
this is you know, we only see each other once a year, but this is how we
and
behave.
We
talk over
we
each other.
We have a lot
other.
To say. We can't shut up when
no,
we see each other.
No, we just
other,
can't
right?
shut up.
That's right. And someday we're going to take our show on the road.
Would before I step
yes.
down?
Yes. How about there are newer poets in this audience right now, former newer poets. Is that what you were going to say?
Well, actually, before that, if I may.
Oh.
I would like to.
I jumped the gun. I do that.
Where was I? Oh, yes. I was going to acknowledge one of our patrons of this event who has generously donated his money each year. And I'm glad to see he is once again in the audience.
Is he here?
He is. He's
where?
Over there. Yes. Could we please acknowledge Terry Boom me. Boom McCarty?
Where's Terry?
Stand up, Terry.
Oh,
Terry. Terry pays.
Yay.
Has
a
paid
poet.
for the printing.
He's
a poet himself.
A poet in his own right. An organizer of poetry events, and maybe one of the few poets and private citizens in L.A. who actually is also a benefactor.
Who actually shows up with money, that's what that means.
Yeah.
But, yes, now you can go ahead. I'm going to step down, and you can take over now.
All right. Well, first of all, let's all applaud Amelie.
I haven't done anything. Okay.
All right, and I also want to thank the Library Foundation of Los Angeles, Poets and Writers, Inc., yay, Terry McCarty, Beyond Baroque, Amelie, I'll just thank myself, why not, I'll just throw myself in there too, the Los Angeles Poetry Festival, the audience, and like I was starting to say, there are newer poets, secret, they're in the secret identity, they may even be sitting next to you, and you think they're just, you know, any regular person, but they're actually former newer poets, sitting next to many of you in the audience. Now, may I have all the former celebrated, luminous, newer poets stand, please? Hopefully, stand. One of the things. things I love about this event, it really is the longest running annual celebration for gifted newer poets in Los Angeles. Los Angeles doesn't have very many traditions, as we know, and this is becoming one of the immortal traditions. And the newer poets come back each year, and our audience gets a little bigger and bigger each year. Maybe we should have 10 newer poets every year, and then our audience would get really big. Okay, so let me, have I thanked everybody? Have I left anybody out? Fred Dewey. Okay, we'll do more at the end. All right, my first poet has had a very interesting rise. Started with me, actually, as a student writing poetry, is now studying with Lou Matthews. He will tell you the story when he comes up here. Ro, where are you? Are you in the Ro, raise your hand. There he is. He's sitting there, right there. That's him. He's coming up soon. Okay. Ro, you will tell them the story of how a poem has grown into a novel. It's amazing. You could start a poem, and it can just, and then you just set it down, you water it a little bit every day, put some minerals in it, and it grows into a novel. Is that how it works? Anyway, so Ro was born in Sri Lanka. He attempts to capture the recent dark history of his motherland through his poetry. He's presented his work at Artwalla 2004 and 2005, and his poems have appeared in Poetic Diversity, The Best of the Net 2006. He studied with, Suzanne Lummis. That sounds strangely familiar. Okay. By the way, that's who I am. I don't think I've even, did I even introduce myself? No, nobody even knows who I am. And fiction writing, he's studying fiction writing with Lou Matthews. He's working on a novel which began as a poem. Ro, yay.
Hi. It is a special day for me. I see three of my gurus here, Lou Matthews, Laurel Ann Bogan, and Suzanne Lummis, who gave me my voice. And in the safety of this great city of Los Angeles, I want to take this 10 minutes to remember those who don't have a voice today. The Burnt, 1971, Sri Lanka. Silent as the low tide, the tarred smell of the burning flesh of old tires oozes through wattle walls, clings to our skin. Knelt by the cinders, Amma scars garlic, spreading the bruised cloves on four corners of each room. But the reek snakes through the ceiling, eating into our bones like asbestos. Atama prays for her seven gods, lighting seven lamps with flickering wicks like her lips. Amma looks for her rosary among the trinkets. One more god won't hurt. Beyond the shuttered windows, muffled jeeps roam, duffel coats flutter, goat hoof satyrs knock on our doors, calling out names. Atama hangs her talisman on the doorknob. In the dawn, the radio unchains the curfew for a few hours. We queue up for dal and white bread, sift through the empty sarongs, touching the missing. We utter their names like a mantra, a lament, and they cling to our skin. This poem is called Lost Column. Bite marks on the wall, boot stains on the rug, your crumpled red t-shirt chokes on a wrecked bed. They sniffed around in your room for hours, clawed through the shadows, lifted prints of your thoughts, left with your satchel, spilling words along the way. No scrapbook of your columns, no tin box of your poems, no pirit chant, no seance. In the belly of the jungle, on a pyre of tires, they erased you word by word. Spirited away. After the third dram, he lifts the shot glass to the gas lamp, looking for that last drop of coconut arak. The slurred words come looking for me. Marconi shortwave radio coughed to the crackle of coconut shell fire pot. Grandpa's lap feels like our satin couch, eyes sinking. Grandpa shuttled the radio dial. I hold the hairpin antenna, wiggle it just a hair this way or that way, and we are off across the world in Greenwich Mean Time to a world that meant nothing but was everything. Grandpa's thumb nimble on the dial. First stop Lucknow, then to Moscow. Swan Lake, he says, sways his chin like a metronome. We hear 10 languages in one night, music and gibberish like shadow puppets. We make up names for the song, the tune that finds us. We make it all our own. It is 1956. Fires burn from Jaffna to Colombo. Marnie's bakery charred, no more honey buns with sprinkled sugar caps. Marnie went away with the Red Cross, 15 years bundled in a gunny sack. Grandpa shuts the window, downs the third dram, kindles the fire pot, sinks into the chair, all arms and legs. I bend the hairpin antenna to the north. We run away again. Now to that poem that got me on this path to write the novel. It's called Bad Karma Girl. And I hope someday you will welcome her to your home as a novel. Bad Karma Girl. A monsoon night, the moon curls into the seventh house. You are yanked like a weed, wet and cold. A howl fills you with dark water. You burst, holler a lungful of hurt. They said there is no cure for bad luck. They said it is the will of the planets. They had the time of your birth inked on a dead scroll like a life sentence. You walk on the shadows, two steps behind the rest. You bathe in moonlight like humming lullabies to the lilies. You unleash the cumin, color onions with saffron, cajole the brinjal to fornicate with the tamarind. Talk of your wicked fry splatters across the bazaar like mustard seed on royal oil. Behind the kitchen curtain, unseen like the soot, you become a legend of no one. I thought of finishing this evening with the first poem I wrote in 1971. It's written in my native tongue, Sinhalese. So since you don't understand it, I can say it was a fabulous poem. I thought you might like to hear what our language sounds like. Kalani kange urenumba gya male gamapira unumba ivakala male numbe petnta gamagini pat ula male numbe akuru vel tahagen gya male. Thank you very much.
That was Ro Gunatilaki. It was really nice. So the LA Poetry Festival often asks other organizations and other people in the community to suggest poets, recommend poets who maybe we haven't discovered. And we certainly asked Terry McCarty this year, and he directed me toward Mary Torregrossa, who's a wonderful choice. Wonderful choice because one of the things that's also important to us, there are several things that we look at, but we also like to think about, as well as poets who are writing very well, writing really substantive, wonderful work, we like it when poets are also engaged in the community, that they're also organizers, that they're maybe running reading series and giving a lot back to the community. My next poet, Mary Torregrossa, is a member of the Emerging Urban Poets Workshop and Echo Space Poetry Collective. I guess there are some people from the Emerging Urban Poets here in the Echo Space Poetry Collective. Who are you? Raise your hands. Yay, okay, there they are. All right. She has led writing workshops, organized special events, and hosted readings in the San Gabriel Valley. She's been profiled in the LA Times and the Pasadena Journal newspapers, and her latest chapbook, Shoebox Poems, was compiled as a fundraiser for Hillsides, a foster care center in Pasadena. So, Mary. All right.
No. Finally. Well, I too would like to thank Suzanne and Fred, Terry McCarty and his wife Valerie, poets and writers in the library for their sponsorship, and a thank you to my mentors, Don Campbell and David Charbonneau, who both have a passion for poetry, and my musical collaborators for the Hillsides fundraisers, Connie Grisham and Veronica Christensen. And that was an elegant and really exciting, and we raised a lot of money, and it was really, I was really proud that poetry could do that. And thank you to my husband and my girls, Nina and Elaine. In this first poem, I make reference to the Persian custom of putting a sugar cube in your mouth and then letting the hot tea melt it as you drink the tea. Tea remedy. This might be my remedy, this amber signature of tea, set here before us in cups of glass too hot to touch. The steam is aromatic in my head, petals float upward out of reach. The simmer of my body hums within so that I tremble like an aftershock of the Sierra Madre and rattle silver teaspoons into saucers. I sit, clenching sugar cubes in my back teeth, like Esther or Cobra or Zara might have years before or yesterday. The tonic eases its way into your explanation, infused with details of the truth. I listen, waiting for the tea to cool. When I was a teenager, I had the privilege of spending part of my summers on Cape Cod. You know Cape Cod? Provincetown? Well, no, I wasn't there. This next poem is about that time. Summer lightning. Not sure. We lay in the long grasses looking at a sky so big, I said it was Montana. Each time a car appeared in the distance, kicking up dirt, we dug deeper into the low sandy hillside on the lookout for his dad's blue Plymouth coming back from the fair. And when the dust settled on bare arms and legs, hand stamped, I said, the road must be Nebraska. At times, the sound of seagulls reached our ears, and when my lips touched his skin, I tasted salt. The clouds were so wonderful, I whispered, it could be Texas. Later, among the crickets and the holly, we watched the summer lightning paint the sky. About the accent. Yeah, I know, I talk like this. And people like to guess what eastern state I'm from. It's one of the original 13 colonies, is what I say, but they rarely get it right, you know? I talk with my hands and put quarters into pocket meters outside City Hall in Pasadena. But when I get off the plane and where I'm from, everybody talks like me. We drink iced coffee on hot, muggy summer days and toss rock salt onto our front steps in winter. I get drunk on the green of so many trees. In my hometown, if you want to find your way around, you have to know where things used to be. Why, just the other day, my neighbor says, there's a new Dunkin' Donuts on the corner of Prospect Street and Hope, you know, where the old Newport Creamery used to be. All the aunts and cousins talk like this. They think my kids have the accent, but they don't, because they were born and raised here in California, you know, where Mexico used to be. My husband's nickname when he was a boy in Guatemala was Zapoleche, which means milk frog, because he was a gangly kid with a light complexion. And this is called At the Zocalo. Zapoleche whistles at doorways, calls out Jimmy, who always wears sandals, who whistles in turn two houses down to call out Negro. They go downtown to whistle at girls who strut by the fountain. And there, can you see? An auntie is watching. Birdies happily fly through the cool spray, whistling. We gather together like a new day. Stand together like the pages of a book. Stick together like fans in the cheap seats at Dodger Stadium. This day we are family at a funeral, friends in a wedding, each one and all of us speaking in multitude, shouting in chorus. We break bread in the company of one another's silence. We gather like dark clouds before a storm. In this communion, we take stars into our mouths and wonder how bright is the universe resting on our tongues. How fierce the glow of gathering, how fearlessly the rain falls on the land, a brotherhood of flood. Comadres in the street, we bang pots and pans, we jingle like coins in an old coffee can. We add up like money in the bank of solidarity, we march, we rally, we congregate. You can hear us coming before we even get there, and we won't give up without a fight. We come together to unite. Now, here's a poem to start the summer off with. Fly. You, iridescent, green, black bug ball with wings and wicked buzz, batting incessantly around my picnic plate of carne asada and salsa. We swing at you, flick at you, slap at you. You, irritating, contaminated, coward, uptight, nasty, Ferengi, fraidy cat, annoying little bloated, big-eyed beast. Oh, now, here come your friends. Blood-red eyes bulging, called in from some pile of steaming fresh dog poop on the sidewalk nearby. Or what? Miles away? How do you do that? Put a shout out on my fly space. Come and get it. Backyard barbecue. 12733 Ohio Street, Baldwin Park. Time to call Homeland Security and add myself to the no-fly list. Little Mary Sunshine. All sweetness and light, that's me. I buzz like a bee and sting like a butterfly. Oh my, sugar and spice. I ruffle no feathers and I never make waves. What would it take to convince you I'm on your side? I always turn the other cheek and say my prayers at night. I wear sensible shoes, my heart on my sleeve and aim to please. Can't you see my inner beauty? The scent of rose petals precedes me when I enter a room. My words drip like honey. I listen politely and never interrupt. I purr like a kitty, a bundle of joy, and I'd have sex with a girl or a boy, except for the fact that I'm absolutely pure, famously demure. Everyone wants to be my friend, don't you? My last poem for the evening, I'll end with a prayer. May this poem persist like a plastic bag in a garbage heap. May cockroaches play ping pong with these words. May the meditations of my mouth burn like a Zoroastrian's flame and the sea reiterate my verse. Let these images be tattooed on a tortoise shell and these rhymes ride a light beam into space. May my alliteration glitter like a diamond in the rock of ages and my name be trumpeted by elephants. Thank you.
And that was Mary Torregrossa. All right. Okay. So our last poet, we're coming to our last poet. I also want to thank Justin Veach. Justin, are you still there? There, thank you, Justin. Justin is one of our, he's our really our master of ceremonies tonight and very important here in the Allowed series. By the way, how many people here have been to other events in the Allowed series? A lot of people. And those of you who aren't raising your hand, well, next time you're here at the Allowed series and they ask you if you've been to the Allowed series before, you'll be able to raise your hand, right? It's a great series. All right. Kathy Sandstrom is studied with many people, David St. John, many, many people. I think Dorian Locke, she's been a long, long time student of mine. She's one of the most beloved people, I think, in the Los Angeles poetry world, and one of the most, certainly among the most gifted writers, and she goes everywhere, and she's one of the most supportive poets. I have left places, left one reading, driven over to another reading as fast as I can, and Kathy is there. I don't know, she seems to be at 10 different readings at the same time on some weeks. Her work has appeared in Solo, Lyric, Cider Press Review, Runes, Plowshares, the anthology Matchbook, So Luminous the Wildflowers, and Open Windows. She's a two-time winner in the Arroyo Arts Collective's Poetry in the Windows, one of the greatest public art projects for poetry ever in the city of Los Angeles. All these little poems went up in the windows of the storefronts and the merchants along northeast LA, Figueroa. And she's lived in Japan, England, Denmark, the Deep South, the Carolinas, and Appalachia. And she's not finished yet. Okay, Kathy Sandstrom.
If you know me, you know that inside I am jumping up and down and clapping to be here. It's such a treat. I want to thank especially Suzanne. It's hard for me to measure the difference Suzanne made in my life. She was my first teacher. And as Cherry Vasconcellos said, do what you have to do to study with Suzanne. She knows more than anybody. I learned more from her than from any other person. And then you get started on Suzanne's generosity. Second, I'd like to thank all of the poets who are here because I am learning from all of you still, and your generosity humbles me. I would like to open with two poems from a series of poems that I wrote about living in Yorkshire. One of them is from my chapbook at Marston Lodge. Marston Lodge is in Yorkshire, 6 miles from the city of York, a mile off the paved road, a mile over the fields to the next visual neighbor, and a mile on the field road over to the estate farm. Marston Lodge, Long Marston, County of York. All the land around us belongs to Major York. Also the house we live in, the barn behind, the swineherd's hut beyond that. Also his, the apple trees in the orchard and every apple. Even the windfalls rotting softly in the deep grass. His, each pheasant hen in the brush and all her chicks. Every trembling rabbit in the hedge. Even the shallow pond filling too slowly against encroaching cattails and the black-billed coots who paddle the still surface. Blasted oak, stark sentry at the lane's end, its beefsteak mushroom livid as a scar. The nettles rank along the roadside, knee-deep at the garden's edge. The circle of wild mushrooms near the midden, all his. His, the surrounding flat fields of oats to the south, long columns of currant bushes rising over the swell of the land to the east, regular as militia. His, stacked bales of hay outside the empty barn. As far as the next village, his lands and all thereon. Ours, sunlight that stripes the floor of the byre mornings when the kettle is put on for tea. The dreams of field mice who winter under the stairs. Ours, wind off the moors, snapping sheets, rippling in summer the slender stalks of early oats to silver green. Whistling over the garden wall, driving before it slant needles of rain. Ours, the call of rooks in the field early mornings as we tend our vegetables, weeding and hoeing, earthing the celery and asparagus. We'll stay at Marston. This is a weather report. This has a word in it. I don't know if you will know wellies. We don't have nearly enough weather here to know what wellies are. They're Wellingtons. They're hard rubber boots. You jam your wool-socked feet down into them to go out into the wet. One day in three. Steady, soft rain. Not the driving squall you wish for, hungry for drama. Sometimes only a fine drizzle. Just enough to keep you out of the garden, your wellies mud-caked, standing ready in the scullery. These last few weeks, I guess, I have maybe even a couple of months, I've been taking young Jacqueline to work at the Huntington Library and driving down Allen in Pasadena, and I have watched this project come together. On a succession of mornings, the wheelbarrow, stakes and string, the rake, stacks of paving stones, the foldable workbench, the saw. The man grizzled and gaunt, plaid shirt faded above work pants, his scuffed brown boots. The earth bared, rake leveled and pounded flat. Him kneeling, setting the cut pavers into a pattern, he starts with a central Moravian star, a design best seen from above. What I know, that nature will not wait. Green will push up between the stones, that the pavers laid like pastilles on the tongue will disappear edges first as if melting, to be swallowed invisible. That the man will not live to see this, that he works slowly but steadily, concentrates on keeping the pattern true. I offer you a love poem. This is about love over times. You again. Over the North Sea to Iceland by longboat, our child born too soon on the beach. I tended the manor when you didn't return, grew mallow, white nettle, and sage. I held your kimono, helped dress you for war. You rode out to meet me in Derry. Long empty months I spent at the Dasha, while you plied your trade in Kiev. In Paris you hid me, brought bread and wine. In Egypt I taught you to write. From high cedar groves I hurried to Tyre, but your boat had just sailed on the tide. Here, certain I'd missed you, I quickened my pace. Turn around, you said. Turn around. The book artist Tanya Baban took that little poem and made the most exquisite artist book out of it. And I am amazed and profoundly proud to tell you it's in the Getty Museum. What were the odds? I subscribe to Discover magazine because it gives me little mouthfuls of science that I can digest. So this poem opens with an epigraph that I got from there. It just stopped me. Physicist André Lind speculates that consciousness may be a fundamental component of the universe, like space and time. In a quiet hour, moonlight on the desert landscape, nothing stirs, cold and flat the air. Perhaps the moment of the winter solstice, an instant of standing still at the apogee before turning back toward the light, the day's slow lengthening. And me, lying here, pinching together the edges of what we call reality, holding fast the universe, along with others awake in this quiet hour. Riding the planet I might hold in my mind all that is yet to happen, might help create this world I know. As practical a notion as turtle on turtle on turtle all the way down. Before I close, let me thank again all of you for coming. Thank the library. I think this particular Aloud series is one of the best things going in Los Angeles, and I'll meet you here next year for Newer Poets 15. Releasing the Birds. Next to her embroidered lawn handkerchiefs, my mother's empty gloves lay paired in the nest of her drawer. Short white Easter ones that stopped at the wrist, netted crocheted gloves for summer, an ecru pair, 4 inches past her watch band, the backs detailed with 3 rows of stitching raised like fine bones. 3/4-length pigskin to wear under coats, black lace for cocktails, white for weddings. Sexy gloves with gathers up the length so they'd look like they were slouching. The knitted Bavarians, loden green, stiff as boiled wool. My first prom dress, strapless, floor length. I wore her formal opera gloves, pearl buttons on the delicate undersides of my wrists, then the white went up and up. I kept 6 pairs. My sister took the rest. Saying someone should use them, she gave them away at work, set them out for the taking. Tonight I lay the table with my mother's china. At each place, a pair of gloves, palms up, wrists touching in a gesture of receiving and giving. I held back the gloves she'd bought in Italy. Black leather, elbow length. The right glove torn at thumb and palm, as if she'd reached for something too late or held on to something too long. Thank you.
Famous Kathy Sandstrom.
And Kathy now, Sandstrom.
Kathy Sandstrom.
Aloud Audio is presented by the Library Foundation of Los Angeles and made possible through support provided by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Annenberg Foundation, City National Bank, contributors to the Stay Home and Read a Book Ball, and Donna and Martin J. Wolf. Media support provided by KUSC 91.5 FM and KCET. Aloud theme composed by Larry Karish.